How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Or if you're just joining us, welcome to it. If you are just getting up right now and looking outside for the first time and going, you know what I think it is? It snowed earlier this morning. Looks like it's pretty much done. Maybe still parts of the city, a little snow falling, but yeah, some of us who drove in early this morning were driving in light flurries, which is just, well, it's what's to come. But it is before the 1st of November. We're going to have a cloudy rest of the day, warmer with a high of 8 degrees. Right now it is 0. J.R. Simmer in Amber. Congratulations, by the way, to caller 20. That would be Matt. Matt is one of 5 daily qualifiers in our TSN 1200 Pizza for a Year contest. So, Matt, good luck in our daily draw coming up tomorrow. You're into the grand prize draw as well, which is going to come up on Monday with the three of us. So if you don't have your name on the list, you're down to 5 + 5 = 10, + 4 = 4. 14 final opportunities.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
To get your name on the list, from which we will draw one name, and that person will win pizza for a year. And, by the way, we need to, right now, award the daily prize from yesterday. So, we got another. Are we not only leading all Ottawa radio stations in listeners named Ryan, but also in Matt's? Because we had a Matt qualify. It's not the same Matt, is it?
It is not. This is a different last name.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we got a Matt. We've got a Shannon. We've got a Steve. We've got a Pasquale. And
nice.
We've got a Scott. And I've assigned numbers 1 through 5 randomly, Simmer, to the 5 of them.
Yep.
You'll give me a number, and I will. We will pick the name, the winning name.
Well, I'm looking around the room, JR, and there's a little 580 CFRA, so I'll go with number 5.
Number 5 is Shannon. Congratulations, Shannon. Way to go. If I remember correctly, I think Shannon qualified on our show, so way to go. You have won a $100 gift card courtesy of Gabriel Pizza, and all 5 of you have qualified for Monday's grand prize draw. All right, we're going to get to the World Series in just a second. Dodgers win it. Very controversial decision to pull the starting pitcher and everything. But Simmer, I wanted to run something by you.
Yeah.
I'm kind of feeling pretty proud of myself this morning.
Okay.
I'm in, and I don't want to go too long about fantasy football.
No, but it's fun.
It is fun. But yeah. I'm in 2 leagues. I'm in the league here in the station, which I consider to be sort of a... It's sort of an American Hockey League version of real fantasy football. Nobody really makes any trades.
Okay.
We all kind of do our things. And then I'm in the league.
But I beat you 4 straight, so
that's why it's the minor.
One of us is going to be promoted to the NHL. Be me.
Maybe. But I'm also in a league with family members, mostly nieces and nephews. They're all spread all over the world or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're coming up to the trade deadline. I got Russell Wilson this year.
Okay.
Okay, I got Alvin Kamara this year.
Yeah.
Like, I've got
a
team that looks like it could win a championship.
So who are you greasing run a trade here?
Well, one of my nephews.
Okay.
My nephew Ben, who, by the way, is he went into this year. And again, this is it's a keeper league, so you can keep three players for up to 3 years.
Yeah.
So
there's
some strategy going on
there. Oh, absolutely.
Ben doesn't think he's going to win this year. So anyway, I've had my eye on Christian McCaffrey to push me over the top, of course.
Okay.
He's been injured since the start of the year. And I drafted CeeDee Lamb. And I hate having Dallas Cowboys on any fantasy football team I have, but
which
he's had a good
sense.
Year.
Yeah.
So I have been kind of gently nudging him toward a McCaffrey for a CeeDee Lamb kind of a thing for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
Just, you got any interest? One of those. So I want to kind of take you through the scenario because I'm getting a little antsy now because he says I'm talking to some other guys about trading him there as well.
So last night,
so I sent him a text yesterday saying, hey, you know, where are we at with
not a big deal here, but just
touching base. Just getting to catch up.
What is that fella's name again? McCaffrey?
Exactly. Just touching base here. Where are you at as far as you're thinking? He says, you know what, some guys, I'm looking to maybe get a deal done this week or something. So I sent him a text at one point, and I said, we're going back and forth. And he says, you know, To finish off the deal, he said, because you do want to swap some draft picks as well. And I said, I'm not really interested in, in anything up high, like a first round or anything. I'll swap a late round or whatever. And he goes, and he suggests like a 6th for a 10th, blah, blah, blah. And I go, well, I don't want to negotiate. This is the text I sent him.
Yeah.
I don't want to negotiate the fringes of a deal unless we can finish it off right now. If you're telling me we can get it done, let's get it done.
Nice.
And he goes, I'm in. Aww. And right there, I got it done within 2 minutes.
Nice.
And I am the proud owner of Christian McCaffrey, who is going to push me to the championship this year in the Family Fantasy Football League. Way to go, me.
That is solid.
Oh, man.
The next phase of the deals, and if you're working whatever sport or fantasy world, that's also when you get in to say, listen, you also need to bounce that idea off of other people. Let me know what else is being offered here.
Yes.
And I'll give
you. I did that as
well. I'll give you a very honest comparison as to what's the best deal to make.
I did that. I said, listen, if you want to shop them around a little bit, just let me know what your best deal is, and I'll let you know if I can beat it. But then he sort of opened the door to getting a deal done right now.
So nice.
I thought, I would not surprise me right now.
Yeah.
If Pierre Dorion is listening, which he says he doesn't, but he always does. Is it Peter McTavish, the assistant GM, who we don't see?
Mac
If he's out and I'm in.
It's not a possibility.
Based on what I pulled off last
night. I mean, that would be the thing they'd be looking at. So your ability to publicize that, along with listening to it, some of the... Now, you've already put together the offer sheet for Barzell.
Yes.
Like, you got a lot of stuff here you could roll right in. Hey, right into the boardroom. There's Huge, and there's Pierre. And you're sitting there. Maybe Mr. LeBlanc is there as well, and you just roll this right out from trades to
offer PowerPoint
sheets.
Presentation.
And you know what?
I'm going 113 pages on my plan. I'm going one page better than the plan that the Huge has.
And it's funny when I heard about that plan, I don't want to say an interesting story, but a story back in the day, there's a scout, I don't know if this is Bob Strum Sr. or Jr., that works for the Ottawa Senators, but Bob Strum had put together this manual because he had actually started the Las Vegas Thunder in the IHL, JR. But basically the manual was, if you wanted to start a professional hockey team, was everything, like from hockey, on and off the ice, PR, this incredible manual. And the story is that Doug McLean went to meet with the ownership group in Columbus and basically presented this manual. Now, I don't know if Dougie put his name on it, but they were friendly as well. Like, he and Strummer actually worked for Columbus. But that was what got Dougie McLean. And now I'm talking, you know, about something that's probably 1,000 pages. And, it was very interesting what he put together.
Yeah, the initial sends plan to for expansion, you know, put together by Randy Sexton, Cyril Leader, and Bruce Firestone.
Yeah, for sure.
That was, and there are still some copies of that are around, the original one. That's, 800 pages or whatever, leather bound. Now we're talking about starting an NHL team from scratch, including building a building and all that other stuff.
Sure.
But it'd be fascinating to go through something
like
that.
It really is. Like, it's really neat, too, and this is where sports is at, and a lot of the teams work together. But, you know, quality control, presentation, you've commented a couple of times in watching the KHL games. You know, they
look pretty good on the clips I've seen.
Yeah, and they've taken very much kind of the model of the National Hockey League. Now, they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the presentation of it as far as, again, uniforms, going with English on the back to all these things you're doing. And there's just all these other little things to make sure you're not filling Mickey Mouse, that the players are treated properly, that transportation to hotels. Hey, there's a lot that goes into this to make sure that the league feels like it's a first-class operation.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, to wrap up, and I did not fleece my nephew, okay. But on the WhatsApp, the family WhatsApp, talking about the Fantasy Football League, and as I said, a few of the people live over in Europe. There's been some reaction to, were you drunk when you made that trade? Collusion came up there as well. So
nobody has to approve the trade?
Like, they did. He wasn't happy about it because he was in on McCaffrey as well.
I don't know, but that's a tough one, right?
Yeah.
You end up with that. Now, did you have to slide him? These guys are all big drinkers. You had to slide him a case of beer?
No, nothing. You know, if we get together, hopefully be able to get together over the holidays, maybe we'll tip a couple. And this is a keeper league, so he'll be, I can only keep McCaffrey for the rest of this year. Then he's got to go back.
Okay.
He gets Lamb for 3 years. So it's a win-win.
Oh, you can do that.
I presented this as a win-win, and he said, absolutely,
And after you win the championship, and no, seriously, though, and this is the real key to making these deals. Like, you got to really, next time you're socially together having calls, like, you can't ever make fun of them.
No.
You've got to pretend that this
you
was
made
good.
A great trade. I can't believe you talked me into that deal.
No, this was good for both sides, you know, and hey, don't listen to whatever the people, because you want to go back to them later and make later deals. Hey?
When you, when you were making deals back in your NHL days, did you was there a time when you felt like you had another general manager, like you had him on the line, and it was just kind of like, okay, let time to reel him in here?
You know what's funny, JR, because I didn't make many trades, you know, directly. I mean, I was involved in lots of deals with David Poile to George McPhee to Cliff Fletcher to John Ferguson, so I'm there, but I actually made deals at the American League level, and I only made about four or five of them because it's not that common. And first of all, is it American League contracts? If it's NHL contracts, contracts, you got to be careful because that's generally the general manager wants to do. But because I knew my players at the American League's level so well, and actually one of my favorite trades, and nothing bad, it was with Peter Chiarelli, who was running Grand Rapids at the time, or actually they had already moved to Binghamton. But he wanted a rough and tumble defenseman, and I had a kid by the name of Dean Melanson, who was a good American League player. And we ended up getting Joseph Boumediene, who ended up playing some NHL games for us and ended up being pretty good. But those were as far, but it was more friendly. You didn't feel the, you know, you're in the energy of a room and a trade deadline or a draft, and you're trying to figure out deals, man. It is an incredible sway of emotion of how you're handling it, how bad you want the deal, whether you're selling or buying. It'd be a fun experience for anybody to go through.
Yeah, yeah, to be a fly on the wall during when trades are going down.
Yeah,
but there
has
to have been, trades that have happened maybe that you weren't involved in or been a part of a management group before, where you hang up the phone when it's all said and done, you go, oh my God, did we fleece that guy?
Yeah, oh, for sure, yeah. And
And
unfortunately, you make trades, and then you kind of look around, and not same, because usually this is the case of, you know what, you're either as a franchise, when it comes especially to a trade deadline, you're either selling or buying, right? So there's not some big surprise as the direction you're going, but yeah, it was, I remember we finished off, and again, I hate to throw out names, but just some funnies. He's long gone from the NHL, but with Phil Esposito, I remember how badly he wanted Billy Ranford for us after we went to the finals in 98. And at that time, Billy was pretty much toast. And we ended up getting a couple of second-round picks for him. Now, we also overpaid.
That's the ideal scenario, right, where you've got a guy who wants one of your guys so badly.
Well, what's also nice is when you get to the offseason, that when somebody locks in, they can't watch him anymore, and they do not have a pretty good accurate. Because, like I said, Billy's a great guy. He was great mentoring Ole Kolzig, but two-pad slide, 80s style, wasn't working too well at that point. So.
Right.
Yeah, you're locked in on some of those. You know, hey, I got a deal here.
All right, 727 World Series. We'll get to the controversy from the game last night. We went through it extensively in the first hour about the pitcher getting pulled. But listen, we got, and I know there was only, I think, what, 11,000 fans, I believe, were allowed in, about 25% capacity at the baseball stadium, the new one in Texas last night. But man, oh man, did they do sports fans proud last night? But before we get to that, before we get to the trophy presentation, okay, let's take you back and let's measure. And we don't know where the microphones were last night, but let's measure the bad feelings from fans to league commissioners. So we'll start with our favorite, Gary Bettman, when Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup in Nashville.
Nashville, you have. Music City is clearly a hockey city.
Oh.
How about congratulating your Predators and the Penguins on a great Stanley Cup final?
That's outstanding.
Oh,
it's outstanding
real
effort
strong.
By the hockey fans of Nashville. And
well,
of course,
and also staying after at your own rink when they're giving the cup to the other team, and you really don't care about that. You're just there to lay it on the Bettman. Oh, that's strong.
Yeah, very good. And, of course, it was not that. That was in 2017, right? That was the year Ottawa went to the semifinals, the conference finals.
Yeah.
Later on that same year, right, that he was in Vegas when Vegas was about to kick things off.
How about another half for Commissioner Gary Bettman?
Nice.
Was that really necessary for the announcer to do that? Like, if you're Gary Bettman and you just got booed, like, is that... what are you pulling off here, bud? I mean, just let me leave quietly.
Yeah.
Did you think within an hour that the people that booed me have suddenly changed their mind and are going to cheer me?
I think that the Bettman has admitted. I think that he loves it
in a
roundabout way.
No, he doesn't.
You sure?
Absolute lies, JR.
Wow.
There's not a person on the planet that would pretend that they enjoy getting booed like that. And even to this year, people are like, oh, are they going to pipe in the booing? No, he loved this year of just going out nice and quiet, the heads going back and forth. He can hand out the Stanley Cup. So like I say, absolutely. It's like people on social media saying that they love when people talk negative about them. Yeah. Nice try.
So listen, and I'll give credit to hockey fans. They have been the leaders as far as booing their respective sports commissioners. I think it started with hockey fans. I don't remember where it began during the Stanley Cup presentation, I think it began with hockey. It is now spread to other sports.
But the silver guy is the only one that doesn't get booed, right? Like the NBA commissioner is.
Yeah, because he's the best commissioner.
Well, exactly. But you know what I mean? Goodell, I mean, my God, people. We'd have to do a power ranking on this. I actually think the Bettman now is the third most hated. It's very close between Manfred and Goodell.
Well, I was going to say that Rob Manfred is hands down of the big four North American sports, the worst commissioner. But then you brought up Roger Goodell. Yeah, it's close. Anyway, and I've not heard this, Simmer. I don't think you've heard this as well. Yeah. So we got the trophy presentation from the Dodgers winning the World Series last night. We got only 11,000 fans again in Texas. Let's see if they bring it to the Major League Baseball commissioner during the trophy presentation.
2020 is going to be remembered as a baseball season.
That was pretty solid. First of all, it had good length. Yeah. Okay, we're talking, that was at least about a 15-second gap.
And a shock factor. Like, he was a little bit like, wow, okay. Wasn't expecting this.
Yeah, I haven't seen this visually. Like I said, that's the first time I've heard it, so I don't know. Hammer, did you actually see the video of this?
I did, but the video was just on Rob Manfred the entire time. Yeah.
And what's his reaction? Like, he doesn't step back from the mic going, no. Oh my God, why are they booing me?
No, but
because you're a terrible commissioner, that's why.
It breaks his thought as he's trying to get his little speech out. It just cuts it in the middle.
Now, again, we're only 11,000 and a 25% capacity or whatever it is down in Texas. So, and again, we don't know where the microphone was placed. That one didn't seem to quite live to the level of a full house in Nashville.
More people. You got a roof on the building. You
more
got
drunk,
a little bit closer.
Too.
Oh, more yeah, drunk, for sure. And in this case, most of these, I'm assuming if it's Texas, they're probably Dodgers fans, right?
Yes.
Most of the Rays fans would have been fast asleep by that late.
Didn't go to the game.
No, exactly.
Not interested.
So you got those. And also what makes it even better, like I just don't think that maybe football is close, but man, it's so passionate and that the players hate Manfred and probably as much or more than the fans do, right? So they're very united in that. Now, did Chevy guy show up to hand out the car? Like, was he available?
Well, Chevy guy. Do we have Chevy guy? If we can find Chevy guy. Chevy guy goes back to, and I want to say, I think the year the Royals won the championship, which I think was in 2014.
So it was World Series, right?
But they're regional guys, okay? The guys from, so I know that that Chevy, I believe, I know they're still involved in giving out, I think, a new truck to the World Series MVP, which Corey Seager of the Dodgers was named the MVP last night. So I'm thinking there was a guy, but there's no guy that can match this guy.
At Chevrolet, we have also been proud of the latest and greatest technology in our truck lineup, which is the all-new 2015 Chevy Colorado. It combines class-winning and leading, technology and stuff.
Like, did he just run a marathon?
Oh, man.
Best ever.
I feel like the visual is Tommy Boy. I feel like he's a combination of sweating and sharding at the same time. Like, the nerve levels are just, like, the audio.
Sweating and sharding.
Oh, no, he just a mess everywhere. Oh. Right?
I want that for a Friday wrench. I want sweating and sharding.
From Simmer?
That's
outstanding. And you watch we've all watched the video. Those are times where audio is so incredible, right? Like, you're just listening to this guy breathing and, you're just waiting for his buddies and his family.
Someone get him a paper bag, for God's sake.
Exactly. It's like he just found out you're the guy. You've got to do it.
Hammer, there's no doubt. Like, this is a practical joke on every level. He was told, or you give him about a half hour, because that allows him to get even more nervous. You don't want to tell him right before.
And gently slide in the fact that, hey, don't worry about the 50,000 people who are in the stadium. It's the 20 million that are watching on television right now. best ever. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the actual game because it had one singular talking point, one moment of controversy from last night's Dodgers 3-1 World Series clinching victory over the Rays. We'll come back and chat about that coming up next. Pierre McGuire is back out of sick bay. He'll join us after 8 o'clock. And Jeff Jackson, the agent for Connor McDavid and Connor Brown, will join us after 9. All straight ahead here on a Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. This morning, we get caught up on all the hockey news from yesterday. And there's a bit Devontae's signed with the Colorado Avalanche. That stacked defense gets even better with that. And the Senators signed Philip Schlappick to a one-year, two-way contract. So we'll get into all the hockey stuff with Pierre. Including as well, the news looks like the OHL general managers, according to Darren Dreger, will vote on a return to play for the OHL February the 4th is the date that has been targeted. They're going to vote on that perhaps as soon as today. So we'll talk to Pierre about all the hockey stuff coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. But back to the World Series. Game 6 last night. Dodgers up 3-2 on the Rays. In Game 6, Blake Snell, the Rays starter, is absolutely dealing into the sixth inning. Tampa Bay is up 1-0. He is mowing down the Dodgers. He struck out the side in the first inning. He has struck out 9 through 5 1/3 innings, given up just 2 hits, no runs, thrown only 73 pitches. There's no reason to take him out unless you are an analytically driven manager. Let's take it to the sixth.
Blake Snell will not face top of the order third time around. They saw what happened in the fifth inning. Snell is not saying anything, showing his displeasure. But he is showing his displeasure with a little shake of the head. He is not happy that he is out. He was fantastic tonight. But the Rays are sticking to their analytical guns, if you will, and that is bringing in a new arm third time through the order.
All right, so and that's Dan Schulman on ESPN Radio last night. And the fifth inning reference was Blake Snell's start in Game 2 of this series when he took a no-hitter into the fifth inning, gave up a home run, and then a couple of walks after that, he got pulled. Tampa Bay won the game, but he didn't even make it out of the fifth inning. This similar kind of a circumstance, but again, he's only given up 2 hits, no runs. He's only thrown 73 pitches. The Rays are up in the game. A guy just got a single, and they chose to take him out at that point. Here's manager Kevin Cash of the Rays on that decision.
We owe it to ourselves to bring it all together and try to make the best decision. And similar to some other ones that we've made, I've made this postseason, they are gut-wrenching. You feel for Blake.
Do you regret that decision?
Well, yeah, I guess I regret it because it didn't work out.
Yeah, it's good he can laugh about it because they've just lost the World Series They lost that game. A lot of people are saying based on that one singular decision to pull his starting pitcher.
Yeah, and of course he cares, JR, but it must be interesting behind the scenes where I'm not really managing. Like the manager that this is all riding on my decision whether I'm going to keep this guy in or take him out. Well, that's almost different. Well, this has already been predetermined. This is what we're going to do. The computer has told us. Everybody in the war room is telling us. However, this operates behind the scenes. Just very strange. And again, not that you're not nervous during the game, but for the manager that really is making the decision with his gut, this is a completely different situation.
Yeah. And again, the point was made during the broadcast. And, Joe Buck and John Smoltz are talking to the managers every single day. They understand, and they made the point earlier in the broadcast about how, you know, this Tampa Bay team is on board with the way that they play the game, which is very much analytically driven.
Yeah, for sure.
The decision to pull Snow comes as L.A. is about to go up to for the third time through the order. Mookie Betts is the leadoff guy. He struck out twice. Mookie Betts is one of the best hitters in baseball. Oh, we saw that last night. They did not want Snell, despite how well he was pitching, to face the Dodgers for a third time. Again, as I said, despite how well he was pitching. They said that everybody was on board. Now, nobody is necessarily going to come out publicly afterward, but this is the reaction of Rays center fielder Kevin Kiermaier on the decision.
I thought it was Blake's game to lose, if that makes any sense. That's my opinion. I had a great seat in center field and watching how he was just striking out everybody in his slider, curveball, heater, changeup, had everything going.
So that's about as close as you're going to get, and we'll call that a tepid criticism of the way the team has done. But again, this does not come as a surprise. I think while everybody said at the time in live time this is a mistake,
yeah.
It is also not a surprise. This is the way the Rays have been doing it not only this year, but for a number of years now. This is totally analytically driven, decision on pitching changes and pinch hitters and all that and how they position fielders, etc. It is entirely numbers driven. Last night came up and bit him right in the backside and cost them potentially the game.
Yeah, and hey, this is again obviously a very good baseball operations. Their record, what was it, 40-20? Said in the regular season, like they do a hell of a job. They don't have the big payroll like the Dodgers have. But what you also can never measure, and especially as you get to the playoffs and there's an adjustment, but in Game 6 of the World Series, JR, you shifted the momentum of the game by making a decision based on numbers in a computer, right? Which is, in essence, and when Pierre Maguire certainly gets on and he's not a big analytics guy, I mean, that is the real shift in the mentality that you understand the application of it, but you really, well, in the end, you changed the outcome of a sporting event based on not your professional analysis as a manager, based on what had been predetermined. And I think that goes against, and I don't care how analytically based you are, you know, and some would say, well, you know what, this is, you know, 9 out of 10 times it's going to work. Yeah, it didn't. And you may never be back into that situation again anyway.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, this was a great season for the Rays. They end up falling two games short when it's all said and done. I wonder, and Kevin Cash, and they interviewed him during the game last night when at that point Tampa was still ahead and he's kibitzing with the guys. And I wonder at the end of the day if a manager in baseball, we'll keep it, because baseball is such a numbers-driven
for sure,
game, right?
Sure.
It's like hockey has an element of randomness to it, which I get, and I'm a believer in analytics.
Yeah.
But there's randomness to hockey, just the way the puck deflects.
Very much
up,
so,
right?
Yeah.
Whereas baseball is a lot more straightforward of a game, if that makes any sense.
Oh,
but
it does. Yeah.
I wonder for a manager how you feel, because you're managing with one arm tied behind your back. Like, if I'm hired to be the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, Do I not want, and listen, give me all the stats, give me all of it. I want it all to come into my thinking on decisions that I make. But at the end of the day, I'd like to think that you hired me because you believe in my ability
yeah,
not only to motivate players,
well,
and all that other stuff,
yeah,
and keep everybody in line, but also just to manage your way through a game in any given situation where it's not just numbers, but sometimes it's got to be about your gut.
Yeah, but I also think, JR, for the person that took that job, you believe in that, right? You signed up for it and you know exactly what it is. And in some strange way, that brings you a little bit more comfort than making the decision yourself. So I think it goes hand in hand. And I know it's changed even in hockey, but in whatever sport you are, if you're going to go based on the numbers, everybody has to be on board for that. Now, the players don't necessarily in all ways, because again, they're competitors. But as far as a staff, hey, this is I have bought in, and overall, the system has shown itself to be successful. So I know what you're saying, and you would do that differently. But that's probably why they wouldn't have an old school manager, right? Because quite simply,
well, for sure,
it would go completely against everything that you said. You know, you've been, and especially in this case. And then, as I say, I always go back to, in the case of a coach or a manager, whoever it is,
yep,
you're at a point here, you owe it to the athletes, right? Like that's the part I would have the hardest time with, is that you'd worked so hard as a group to get so close, and you made a decision like that when everybody that even doesn't even know baseball that well understands that's just a bad move at a bad time.
And I'm not here to say that I've watched every Tampa Bay Rays game this year. You know, I watched a handful of games, you know, not even full games, innings in which they played against the Blue Jays. That's the extent of it. And I've, of course, watched more of it during the postseason. So I can't speak to every decision, whether every single decision that he has made all season and all playoff has been analytically driven. I don't know that. All I know is that in that moment in time, at what really was a crossroads in that game last night, they went completely with the numbers, and it. Like, I rarely do you see a manager or a coach's decision, first of all, get panned completely by everybody in the moment,
for sure.
Before even the next guy comes up to bat, which is Mookie Betts, and he hits a double. But to come back and within what, three hitters, a 1-0 lead is a 2-1 deficit, and they never come back.
Well, and the other part you have to factor in is that this is the Dodgers. This is what, 3 years, 3 out of 4 years they've gone to the World Series. The pressure on that franchise and the feeling of the way that game was going is that you're going to lose. Now you're going to go into game 7 and the pressure goes up on the Dodgers even more. Do you know what I mean? Like that was just where, again, the momentum feel of it, you had the Dodgers on the ropes, and they're kind of looking at it and saying, wow, let's catch our breath here. And you shifted the momentum for your own club. Like, it really is, in feeling the dynamics of both groups, it was just absolute relief for the Dodgers.
There's a time and place for analytics, and I see analytics being a little bit more important during the regular season, during the course of 162 games, to where the odds are a little bit more in your favor to squeak out some wins. But when it comes to the playoffs, everything is heightened. Everything changes. Jerry, you talk about it beforehand. Closers that are magnificent in the regular season, and then they come into the playoffs, it changes. Either the stress or the magnitude of the game changes for that player. You can't go by the numbers that you had, in this case, July to October, well, July to September. You've got to have the feel. You've got to have the know. And the Tampa Bay Rays saw it during the playoffs. The bullpen was not as strong as it was during the regular season. And you can't keep relying on it. You can't keep going to it.
I'm very much a believer in how athletes are doing in a game. My theory has been in hockey. A guy who's had a really great game is a guy, and not necessarily resulting in goals or points or whatever.
Yeah.
If it gets to a shootout, if a guy's having a great game, I like putting him into the shootout. There's some, like any, in any walk, in any, we all have great days, days in which we're just on fire for whatever reason. Like, I'm on fire today. There's no doubt about it.
Well, you didn't have the caffeine last week.
Exactly.
You know, it's like you've come off the bottle here. You're just rocking and rolling. And then, you're revved up.
Some days in which you're just not. And you know you're not.
And Hammer has all of it on tape the days that you're not.
Exactly. But, you know, that's human nature. You can have good days and bad days. Yeah. Blake Snell last night is having a great – he's not having a good day. He's having a great day in a big spot.
And whatever level, whatever you're doing for a living, but in sports, JR, that to me was one of the most perplexing things of playing, especially being a goaltender, which I equate to kind of being a pitcher, and the stress was having those great games and those great moments and then just trying to figure out what the hell not only did I do mechanically but physically, why did it feel so good? And I'll go back historically, and I think about Curt Schilling pitching for the Red Sox, and the moment he was having, he was in a zone in this pressure moment. This guy last night is in an absolute zone. Like, do you imagine back in the day if they pulled Schilling because of analytics, ended up losing to the New York Yankees? You've altered the course of history, but that guy right there at the biggest moment, game six, opportunity to push you to a game seven, like, he's just feeling it, and it just is really hard to explain away why you'd make a change like that and end up handing over the World Series to the Dodgers.
Some texts have come in at 12-1200. Analytics worked for the Dodgers last night, boys. LOL. Comes from unsigned. What makes it, another one here from Dave, what makes it even more ironic is that Kevin Cash, the manager, is a former catcher who knows very well what kind of overpowering stuff Snell had going last night. He didn't make that decision. And one of the clips we played earlier this morning, which was from Mark Teixeira, right? Who said this decision was essentially made by the general manager and the analytics department before the game even began.
Yeah,
that Blake Snell was not going to face Mookie Betts for a third time.
And that's another part of it, JR, where you'd have to understand the dynamic. Had you kept him in and you lost, do you end up losing your job, right? I mean, that would be pretty simple. Listen, this is the game plan. This is what's worked. Let's stick to it. And like I said, in some ways, you take some of the responsibility away from the manager.
Maybe time for owners to own, managers to manage, coaches to coach, players to play, radio guys to come on to Armchair Quarterback. I wonder how you guys would be sounding this morning if he was right. Be constructive and get the message to the analytics to adjust during the playoffs. That comes from Grumpy. Well, I think we've been pretty upfront, Grumpy. This is not Armchair Quarterbacking, and whether you believe me or not, in the as I said in the first hour, every baseball person I follow said at the moment when Kevin Cash walks out of the dugout and puts up his, I think it was his right hand for the reliever to come in, everybody, before he even throws his first pitch, the reliever comes in, are like, this is a bad decision. This is absolutely a bad decision, and it turned out to be a bad decision. So this is not Monday morning quarterbacking or in this case, Wednesday morning managing. This was people who you can trust a lot more than me about baseball are saying that this was a bad decision in that moment.
And there's nobody on this show or in the station that knows more about baseball than I do. And I always watch for what Steve, I always see what Steve Phillips says. And in the moment, he's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, there's times where, you know, guys throw out stuff like, and this is where, hey, if you're a big baseball fan, you're Steve Phillips and you've worked and played, like, you're watching it and you're feeling this. You're feeling this pitcher having this moment and you're like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. So to me, yeah, you're right. It just went to a different level. And like I said, I just feel bad for the athletes themselves because, as I said, that's a situation where, hey, you understand, and as a franchise or players, you understand how you operate. But in that particular moment, you should have made a little detour here and done that differently.
Yeah, and you just don't know if you're going to get back there, right? I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays are a very much a budget driven. They've got an unbelievable operation. They do a great job, but they're a low budget team. You don't know when you're going to get back there again, right? To two wins from the World Series, and Did the entire series loss come down to that one singular decision? No, I don't think we can fairly say that. But in that moment, in that game last night, that the game absolutely turned. Right there. So, listen, we have always said, how long has The Simpsons been around for now? 30 years or thereabouts?
Yeah, 1990.
How many times has The Simpsons, has something that's come up in The Simpsons actually come through in real life later? Like, it's like their writers are soothsayers of sort. Let us take you back. I don't know what season this is from The Simpsons, but this speaks perfectly to the analytically driven decision last night by the Tampa Bay Rays.
Wait, you, Strawberry. Good effort today. Take a lap and hit the showers. I'm putting in a right-handed batter to hit for you.
What? You're pitch hitting for me?
Yes. You see, you're a left-hander, and so is the pitcher. If I send up a right-handed batter, it's called playing the percentages. It's what smart managers do to win ball games.
But I've got 9 home runs today.
You should be very proud of yourself. Sit down, Simpson. You're batting for Strawberry.
I am? Woohoo!
Attaboy, Homer.
You can do it.
There you go. So yeah. Simpsons once again on the cutting edge.
Yeah, breaking her down and having some fun with it. And as you said, it is really neat, and you try to understand it from a baseball perspective when you talk about the numbers and application for other sports. And what I also wonder behind the scenes, JR, in the other sports, football, basketball, and hockey, you know, using analytics to break down either before a game to understand your opponent or your own team, or after, is one thing. In real time, I would love to know behind the scenes how much of that ends up being used in sports that, you know, as I said, just are not nearly as predictable as baseball.
Yeah. All right, keep the text coming at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll talk more about the game and the decision throughout the rest of the morning.
And Monty Burns makes the right decision there. If I'm not mistaken, Homer gets hit in the head with the ball with the bases loaded, and the winning run jumps over Homer to score.
Nice. There we go. Was that episode Homer at the bat, I'm guessing?
It could be, yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. 7:59. Coming up, we've got the latest news from 580 CFRA. We'll run down the scoreboard for you, the details on the Dodgers World Series victory last night, the latest on hockey, and including the return to play potentially from the OHL. A little bit of football news for you as well. And we're coming back out of sick bay with Pierre McGuire. Coming up next here on TSN 1200.